Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron here.
And this is the Tornado, Tony Pennycal.
I'm coming at you with another edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. Tonight we have two special guests, and in honor of our first guest, Phil Baroni, we're going to start it off with a little sampling of the Jerky Boys. So enjoy, folks, the next few minutes here. The best of the best.
Shut the fuck up! I'm going to...
Yeah, auto mechanic.
Yeah.
You looking for a job?
Huh?
I'm looking for a job.
Okay, are you having experience?
Yeah, 7 years.
7 years?
Yeah, I work on race cars.
You have an inspection license?
I work on race cars.
Okay. Do you have an inspection license?
Special what?
Inspection license. You have inspection?
Oh, inspection. Sure, I have all that shit, tough guy.
Okay, talk to my boss.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
I tell him everything. You have a 7 years experience.
Put your boss on. I'll talk to him.
Hello?
Yeah.
Can I help you?
But what about the job?
What do you mean, what about the job? Are you applying for a job?
That's right, tough guy.
Yeah?
Yeah. I work on race cars.
Excuse me?
I worked on race cars for 18 years.
On race cars?
Yes.
You have New York State inspection license?
Yes, I do.
All right. Where are you working now?
Well, right now, I just had to leave an old job because the difference is with my fucking boss.
Huh?
I had problems with my boss.
You got troubles with your boss?
Right.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll tell you what. You can come down and see me tomorrow.
Yeah, huh? Should I bring my fucking tools?
Excuse me?
Should I bring my toolbox?
Wait a minute. I tell you what, call me tomorrow.
Call you when?
Excuse me?
Call you when?
Call me tomorrow. I don't think you can talk like that. You know, you don't have to call me and talk to me like that.
All right, Lynn, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll come down with my tools tomorrow and I start work tomorrow.
You'll come down and start work tomorrow?
Yes or no?
Wait a minute. I gotta hire you first, guy.
Well, I'm the best.
You're the best?
That's right.
Okay.
I'm serious.
I know.
I'll work circles around you. I'll wrap your fucking head in with a ratchet.
Huh?
You don't have anybody down there that works like me.
Oh, yeah?
That's right.
Okay.
Okay?
All
so
right.
I'll see you tomorrow with my tools, fuckface.
Next comes the very best Marvin.
Hello?
Yeah, where's Paul?
What's calling?
I'm calling about the job, salesperson.
Hold on. Hello?
Yeah, Paul.
Speaking.
What do you need me to sell, babe?
Excuse me?
What do you need me to sell? I'm calling about the salesperson job.
What do I need you to sell?
Yeah. Sell cars? What's the story here?
You sell cars?
You got it.
Where do you sell
them? I sell them up in Middletown, upstate New York. I had a little problem over there, though. That's something I don't want to talk about.
Middletown?
Yeah.
Okay. What's your name?
Paul. Paul Rizzo.
Paul what?
Paul Rizzo.
Rizzo?
Yeah.
Where do you live?
I live upstate.
Okay. That's a long haul from,
Yeah, well, you know, for some people, maybe.
Okay.
Let's talk about selling cars, Paul.
Okay.
I can sell whatever you need sold, I'll sell it. You got bring in a tank, I'll sell the fucking thing.
Yeah, how far away do you live, though?
About 60 miles.
60 miles?
Yeah, don't worry about it. I'm there early every day.
I'm worried about mileage on a car.
Yeah, don't worry, I use my own car, Paul.
Okay.
I drive it silly. Silly.
And why do you want to drive 60 miles to go to work?
Hey, that's my business. Are you up? You want to sell cars through me or what? See, I had problems up there in Middletown. I got to get the hell out of that area. I grabbed some guy. He's, you know, he don't know if he wants to buy. I push his face right in the fucking hood. You know, tell you, but you buy this fucking car, break your fucking head. I had problems over there, Paul.
Well, it sounds like if you're today, you'd have problems anywhere.
You know, sometimes these fuckers, they got to buy. I need dough like anyone. So what do you think? We got something going here or what?
I don't know. I don't run that kind of operation.
You see, hey, we're off to a bad start. You know?
But I don't run that kind of operation.
We'll see. I could tone it down a bit, you know, maybe choke a few people here, and that's about it. Hey, it works. You think it's funny? It works. I sell.
Yeah, but I don't run that kind of operation.
I'm silly. I'm telling you, I'm silly.
Yeah, I don't run that kind of operation. In fact, the salesmen don't even pull prices here.
Let me try somewhere else then, okay?
All right.
All right. See you there later, Nitz.
Okay.
Right.
All right, dear Sizzle Chest. enough of that.
Shit, man, I have not heard them in years. I'll tell you what's funny, man. It made me think about it. Back when I was a senior in high school, I was working at a Roy Rogers. And we were all sarcastic, and, you know, that's when the Jerky Boys are really, really popular. So we would always take different name tags, and a couple of the guys used some of the Jerky Boys' names on their name tags. We had one guy was Saul Rosenberg, the other guy was Dick Hertz. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a cool Jerky Boys' name, so I ended up using the name Habib Abouli. And I used that because I was watching an episode of Married with Children, and Al had to work at a gas station to pay off a bill. And they gave him a shirt that said Habib on it. And then there was a 7-Eleven right next door to Roy Rogers. And the one Indian guy that used to throw us out on a daily occurrence, name was Abul. So that's how we got the name Habib Abul.
There you go.
I was a jerk back then, too.
One of my favorites isn't available online, but it's the Indian guy when he's like, I go to the dentist and I wake up and my pants unbuttoned. That's a funny one. There's a couple of them. The best Frank Rizzo ones seem to be online. He's my favorite, of course. And he reminds me a lot of tonight's guest, Phil Baroni. I have actually been on a conference call with him before, and he's a pretty flashy guy. He's in your face, and he's been around, you know. He's had some troubles. He had some, positive tests for steroids that he got busted for. He had some bad fights at the end of his stint in Strike Force. But now, apparently, he's back in the UFC. So, I don't know. Dana White must have seen something new in him. So, we're going to ask him about that and talk to him about what's going on there. And, of course, we had a huge UFC event, the Ultimate Fighter finale, last Saturday. And Strike Force on the same night. So I was just pretty much all about the MMA this weekend. I don't know if any boxing went on whatsoever. So you're going to have to fill us in, Tony. What?
Well, on big names, there wasn't a whole lot going on this weekend. It was hard because I worked all weekend. I didn't get to really have a chance to even sit home and do anything on my own. But I'm gonna start it off with one of the coolest occurrences over the weekend. I'm working. It was on Sunday. And just by chance, and it was actually a great chance, I got my dad to bring Vinny down to the tree lot where I'm working at. And, you know, we're a little worried Vinny would pee on all 900 trees, but we kept him away from him. He was actually good.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sitting there, and
mm-hmm.
I'm sitting there working, and a guy and a girl show up. First thing they said to me, Lock Haven University. Well, actually, this was on Saturday because I didn't have a sweater. Usually, I wear a sweatshirt, and that day I forget what shirt. I think I was wearing one of my shirts with Italian on it. But so they said Lock Haven University. I said, yeah, they were class of '98 with me when they had come to see me box on, you know, a couple of occasions. So that was pretty cool. Now I'm at the lot on Sunday, and I am wearing a sweatshirt that says Lock Haven Boxing on it. And this guy shows up, and I'll say he was about maybe 6'2", 6'3". He was in pretty good shape. And he looks, he goes, oh, Lock Haven Boxing. He goes, box for Lock Haven? I said, yes, sir, I did. Oh, he said, oh, yeah, you have box? I said, oh, really? And we start talking. Yeah, I box professionally. I said, no shit. Well, he goes, yeah. And he goes, I said, what's your name? He gives me his name. I said, I've seen your fight. I've covered your fights. Really? You fight? I said, yes, I have. And I do remember covering him, and I've never met him before until this weekend. So we're talking a little bit more. And I'm like, oh, where are you training now? I usually train at Upper Darby and this and that. I'm like, yeah, I train out of South Philly. He goes, where in South Philly? I said, the Marian Anderson Rec Center. He goes, I spend at least a day down there every week. I said, no shit. I said, next time you go down there, there's a picture on the wall of a 19-year-old kid with the boxing pose going on and a cool-ass 1996 mullet. I said, that's me. The picture still hangs. We're talking. He goes, so the first thing I got to say to him, whenever I hear the word, he goes, hey, was Rev there when you were there? I said, absolutely. I said, Rev was one of the guys that helped train me. Oh, man, that's really cool. He said, yeah, I know the Rev. I'm like, yeah, Rev's a great guy. And then I said, well, if you're that Marian Anderson, I know you got to know Simon Carr. He goes, who doesn't know Simon Carr? I said, yeah, he was one of the first guys I ever booked for an interview because we just know. We just asked him a question and let him go. 3 hours later, he was done. and we're joking about it. He goes, my advisor's down there, Anderson. I said, who's your advisor? George Hansen. I said, no. You mean chicken. You know the chicken? I said, of course I know the chicken. He's the one I was sending those articles from. So this guy actually is going to come and do some training with me. Because it's hard for him to shuttle down to South Philly. I think he lives in the Norristown area. That's where his girlfriend is, which would be a lot easier for him just to shuttle up, to my area in Harleysville. And I said, the only thing that he can't do in my gym is skip rope. I can skip rope down there, but him being about 5 inches taller is not going to be able to. But, I mean, that was kind of cool that, only I can be working at a tree lot and dang near get agreement to train somebody for boxing.
Everything happens for a reason. Right?
Yeah.
Tony, we're going to probably upset you, but we went out and got a tree from the woods for free. That's how we do it up here in New Hampshire.
I thought you were actually going to drive down to Norristown, PA, and buy one from me.
I was thinking of it, I figured that would be economical. Yeah. That would be the best way to money.
Well, yeah, I'm going to show you how unoffended I am. I just got a new artificial tree.
Yeah, see, when you take a tree right out of the woods, you don't have much selection. It's not a tree farm. So what I even did was last night I took the drill, and once we cut the huge limbs way back, I drilled some holes and I plugged some of the spots. There wasn't many branches with wood glue and carving the end of it so it would just slide right in the hole. It looks great now.
Right.
But I don't do the tree surgery for a living. It's tough work. But I do have another guest we didn't mention earlier. I said Phil, but I do want to mention that we have Maurice Byarm as well. He's an undefeated heavyweight prospect whose father fought Evander Holyfield. And he's fighting in December.
He might be fighting Evander Holyfield if Holyfield keeps going.
Right? I have a story about that in a second. But Byarm's fighting December 11th for the East Coast heavyweight title in Baltimore. So there you go, Tony. If you want the East Coast title, you got to go through Byarm. Are you heavyweight these days or are you still light heavyweight?
Well, if I was in shape, I'd be a light heavyweight, but I'm not in shape, so I'd be a heavyweight.
Wow. Evander Holyfield is going to be fighting Sherman Tank Williams next month at the Greenbrier Resort in West Virginia. And not only is he fighting next month, but he's also going to be fighting 45-year-old Brian Nielsen in Copenhagen, Denmark on March 5th.
Oh, I saw that.
And he says he's going to fight until he gets another title, whenever that might be. Whenever the Universal Boxing Commission of Europe is. Speaking of boxing commissions, the WBC this week, I don't know if you heard, but there's been some rumblings about them not helping out with the Rocky Marciano statue and,
bastards
dragging their feet. And they were saying some guy from Chicago was harassing them, and that was the reason why. So I kind of blew the whistle on that one because I was harassed by some guy from Chicago with a MySpace out of Chicago, and I found out it's like a 71-year-old guy out there who's just nuts about Rocky Marciano. And whether he suggested the memorial or whatever, he thinks everybody should bow down to him for even coming up with the idea, and they should listen to everything he says about it. It should be in Boston, not Brockton, he says. It should be the same exact height as Rocky and not 24 inches tall, whatever, 24 feet tall. But anyway, they just turned around their stance within a day of the story going out in the Brockton Enterprise, saying now the WBC says now that they're going to be maybe reinvesting in this project next July. So I don't know what the heck's going on. But it's been a long time coming. We don't know what's going on. The sculptor says he hasn't even started the statue yet, so what the hell is going on? Jose Suleiman is not doing his homework. But we also had some big UFC events this past weekend. And, of course, Strikeforce was on the same night as the UFC, so there was a little bit of viewing conflict of interest for a lot of people. Like, you know, what do you watch? But if you're like me and you get to watch it online, you know, you can watch it all in one night and see every single fight and write stories about it at opposingviews.com. I even posted the pictures that they sent me, which I tend not to do on the website as much because it just takes a lot of time. But through here, it's not that much time. But anyway, Strikeforce was a night of knockout, so it's pretty easy to run down. Dan Henderson was the main event. He knocked KTFO'd, knocked the fuck out Babalu Sobral in just really impressive fashion. Just great reach, great boxing, all boxing, really. And a little bit of ground and pound. And then also Paul Semtex Daly, another UFC reject, I guess you could say, which is like a theme of this card, fought Scott Kansas Steel Smith and demolished him with a left hook a la Mike Tyson. It was a counter left hook, too. And it was a type of knockout, Tony. You see it a little bit every now and then in boxing. And actually, I learned this in the White Collar Brawler episode the other day. I did not know this, but you notice when people get knocked out, they get hit on the point of the chin a lot, and they just get knocked like crazy out, like out cold.
Yeah, I've seen it happen more than once.
Well, they had this guy on the White Collar Brawler who talked about this study with monkeys that was done. And
I love monkeys.
They put these little helmets on these freaking monkeys' heads, right? And they did a test with the force of moving the head back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You know, how bad was that stress, right? So they found that the monkeys could learn to sustain that kind of stress. But then they did a tiny little tweak. They did it rotational, like whiplash style. And the monkeys lasted like three strokes, and they were down. You know, and it was just like that much of a difference. It's the rotational force, I guess, from a punch that tends to cause the knockout more than the hit on the temple. Like, you see guys get knocked out getting hit on the temple, but you got to hit somebody, like, really hard sometimes to get that. But if you hit a guy on a point of the chin, it brings in the rotational force. And apparently some rule of physics makes that the best way to knock a guy out. So this one with Paul Semtex Daly was right on the button, right on the point of the jaw. And Scott Smith literally went face down on the mat. Boom, out. probably the best knockout of the night, the whole card. And Paul Daly is much improved since his little outburst there against, I think it was Josh Koscheck. He lost to him. But then Robbie Lawler, who was all bearded up, took on one of our former guests, Matt Lindland, and made quick work of him, too. That was an interesting fight because Robbie comes out and he throws his punches, and Lindland goes right to the mat, and then he turned his back to the mat to face the guy, and he ate this punch from a dive. Like, you know, when the guy dives over the goal line and just tries to reach the football over the point.
Yeah.
It was one of those type of dives, but with a punch. And that was the last punch of the fight. And Lindland just turned around so fast, he never saw it coming. So he was out cold. That was a quick fight. And then Antonio Bigfoot Silva had really the comeback of the night. He's the biggest dude, I think, they got in Strikeforce. So one of them anyway. He's a big Brazilian dude. And he was getting pummeled early on in the fight by Mike Kyle. And then just something happened. Silva's head was like cement. He came back second round. He had a better game plan, and he ended up with the knockout. Silva weathered the storm. And in the opening match, a former Tennessee linebacker, Ruben St. Perot of Knoxville, Tennessee, was the only fighter to go to a decision, and he beat Benji Razor Raddick. It was a big name, but he took a big beating. Even though it was the decision, it was not pretty. Sidney Prude just beat the ever living crap out of him. But other than that, we of course had the UFC Top 12 finale, and that was a very interesting series of fights and another controversy, as if the UFC needs any more of those. But I bet you agree with this, that it's a controversy. Now,
I love controversy, by the way.
Yeah, right? You know, we talk about combat sports, so you cross over every now and then. You surprise me. But if you were to go in and decide whether judges are going to judge both boxing and MMA, would you be cool with that? Or would you say, no, that's not a good idea?
Well, for a judge to be a crossover on both sports?
Yeah. Does it depend on
the... I mean, honestly, I can see positives and negatives in both aspects of it, to be totally honest. I mean, I'll give you an example. Now, I'm not talking this guy as a judge or anything, but a very good friend of mine. In fact, he and I talk on Facebook all the time. He is a diehard boxing fan. He's a diehard mixed martial arts fan. He knows the style of both sports, you know, inside and out.
Right.
He can, if he's watching a boxing match, he'll be talking about feints and moves and jabbing and, you know, defense and all that. If he's watching a mixed martial arts event, a UFC match, he'll be talking about, you know, grounding and pounding, triangle chokes. He's a guy that can differentiate and separate and watch both sports objectively and score both sports objectively. But then you take, you know, I'm like, you say, you take a guy like me, I am versed really in one sport as a strength. So, and I can see the little subtle nuances in boxing that I can't see in mixed martial arts. It's almost like you take a baseball umpire and a football referee. So a baseball umpire with 20-some years in the business, be a good football referee? Maybe not. I don't know. Same thing, vice versa. I can see where you might have guys that are accomplished in scoring and judging both sports, but to be totally honest, I would prefer keeping boxing judges judging boxing and mixed martial arts judges judging mixed martial arts and not crossover.
Yeah, I think it's a scenario where you should have a specialist, you know, like they don't, the HBO and Showtime, when they have a Strikeforce card, they don't bring in Harold Lederman to score the card.
Right.
But it seems like Nevada does that a lot. They do the crossovers, and a lot of these guys that are doing judging. I mean, it's an iffy situation either way. You never know how anybody's going to score a fight, how they see it. A fight is a fight, you know? So I've been in plenty of fights where somebody's like, wow, you didn't look too good in there, but, you know, I know I beat the kid. You know, it's a subjective thing sometimes, but there was a fight on the finale where a kid got the decision based on output alone. Just output, and he was throwing, you know, swinging from the fences, windmilling, just throwing all kinds of crap that wasn't landing, and even the fight metrics numbers supported the other guy, Nam Phan, who actually we had another guest not too long ago who talked about he had fought Nam Phan, and he actually was really the fight of the night. They made it the fight of the night, but it really was against Leonard Garcia, and it was the very first featherweight fight in the UFC, and these two just went at it. But Nam Phan just sat back. He was patient. He landed his shots. He totally dominated the second round. And if you gave Garcia the first and third rounds, it was only for output. That's the only way you could do it. And two of the three judges in a split decision just did that. So Joe Rogan, being the comedian and the you know, quick-witted guy that he is and knowing about the sport of MMA, he went off on a tangent, and he was very abusive towards the athletic commission there in Nevada. And he was pretty much asking people to write blogs about it. I did on opposingviews.com, but it was a message that needed to be sent, you know, because basically his main point was, hey, listen, it's not the UFC, it's these judges. You know, people think it's the UFC. It's not. It's the Athletic Commission and it's the judges. So I thought it was interesting in the days following what Rogan said. Of course, the name that was mentioned was Keith Kaiser, who is the director of the commission right now. And he actually came out and said, oh, yeah, well, you know, if you guys don't like our judges so much, how come when you have to go overseas and you can pick your judges, how come you always ask for the same guys from our fucking league, you know? And I was just like, really, that's your excuse? Well, you know, it's probably only a limited talent pool to search from. Maybe that's just a situation that both of them need to work on, but I don't know. It just seems pretty ridiculous. This fight was, you know, the kid's first opportunity after being on The Ultimate Fighter to get a win, and he deserved a win. He fought the better fight. I kind of saw it on the way to happening, you know, but it was really a real harsh thing after the fact, because a lot of people, I mean, just the fans in general who watched it, who were there, were pissed, you know. And then after the fact, when it came out with all the stat numbers, people got more pissed. And it needs to be looked at, you know. You got to score it the right way. And, of course, motto is always, you know, you got to finish fight, I guess, sometimes to win. But anyway, the main event there, we're talking about the biggest fight with tough contestants there, was Michael Johnson versus Jonathan Brookins. And I pretty much predicted this one, the way it would go. I thought Brookins would do a little bit better on the feet, but apparently Johnson's been working on his stand-up. He did a phenomenal job just taking it to Brookins with some boxing early on, but then he just kind of gassed out a little bit. He didn't have the proper technique to avoid Brookins getting his takedowns when he wanted them and when he really needed them in the end. And he just got held down and beat up and tenderized, really, and the whole entire fight after Brookins figured out that it wasn't the best place for him to trade punches there with this guy. He learned that lesson. He's constantly adapting. He's a very humble guy, and I just really can't wait to see this kid develop in the UFC. He's one of the kids that I just think is going to rip through the division eventually in time. Hopefully he'll be groomed the right way, but he's a phenomenal talent. Michael Johnson got worlds better just working with Greg Jackson, one of the best in the business. So that was a great fight if you get a chance to watch it. See it, find it online. Stephen Bonner also had a great fight against Igor Pokorjak. And Igor pretty much got thrown around, tossed around, punched around. But actually, Bonner did so much more jiu-jitsu and wrestling than people are used to him doing. And I think he was actually the one that ended up cut, you know, he was winning the whole fight. One of those weird situations. Kendall the Spider Grove lost to Maya. Demian Maya just totally dominated that fight. Grove couldn't really use his reach. He just got outclassed in every stage of his game. It was an interesting fight, but, you know, went to decision, so I think people get restless. They didn't like to see it, but I think it was just major mismatch. Cody McKenzie and Aaron Wilkinson had their fight, both tough fighters from this season's show. Cody won by his patented guillotine submission, and he got the submission of the night. He was the only submission. Dave Branch beat our old guest Rich Attenito by unanimous decision in the untelevised card. Fredson Pejo, 10-3. And Pablo Garza, who's another tough candidate, but he didn't get into the house. They gave him a fight against Fredson Pejo, and he landed a stunning flying knee in the first minute of the fight, and guy took me about 5 minutes to regain consciousness.
Wow.
Yeah, rough. Nick Pace fought Will Campuzano, won by submission at 4:33, so the final round, by some kind of choke he invented. I didn't see this fight, but relied on the
on my report, so I can only imagine what this was, but they call it like an arm-leg triangle, whatever that is. And we had a decision, Ian Loveland's decision, Tyler Toner, unanimous decision. And finally, the last tough fight on the card, Sako Chivichian, 5-0, versus Kyle Watson, 15-7-1, and Watson really dominated Chivichian pretty badly. But it's still a pretty good fight. Watson's going to stick around, I think. He'll have a few fights in the UFC. And that's about it. And it's just in time to call Phil Baroni. Hey, how you doing? Don't call him Jerky.
How you doing?
I don't know if he'll like that. All right, ZZO. Hey, Sizzle Chest.
Hello.
Hey, Phil.
Yes.
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. And we got Tony the Tornado on the line here, too, the co-host.
Yo, what's up?
What's up, man?
So tell us a little bit about what you got going on here in MMA right now.
Am I on now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got a fight. New Year's Day, Las Vegas at the Jim Grant.
New Year's Day. In the UFC, right?
Yep, UFC.
Awesome.
125, I think.
Right. And who are you fighting?
Brad Tavares, young up-and-coming Hawaiian kid.
Yeah, have you looked at his film? You watched his fights? What do you think?
Yeah, of course. Then I bust him up.
All right. And how did you get your way back into the UFC there?
And they need good, exciting fighters. They called me.
All right. And how did you first get into fighting in the first place?
Couldn't sing or dance. Didn't feel like working a regular job every day. Figured that was pretty tough.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about it?
Being my own boss, you know? Being my own boss and calling my own shots.
All right. And you've been with a lot of different leagues out there in the past. Had a lot of different interesting fights. What was your best fight so far, would you say?
Depends. So I burst onto the scene big with a win over DeBonet, who's the former UFC champion. I knocked him out in 18 seconds. That was like my first big fight, and then I had a couple of losses and got an opportunity to fight in Japan in the main event against Noah. And that was a huge fight for me, and I won that fight by knockout. So, you know, I've had a couple, you know, big fights through the years, but this next one's the most important by far.
Yeah, Brad Tavares, a big name, he's a young up-and-coming kid.
Yeah, undefeated, you know, but you know what they say about that, everybody's undefeated until they lose once, and you know, he's going to lose on New Year's Eve,
yes.
New Year's Day, whatever it is.
Either one, it'll happen, right?
Yeah.
So, did you guys sign a contract with the UFC? Or are you doing?
It's signed, sealed, delivered, done deal. You know, it's a. I think it's going to be on Spike TV. I think there's like a push by the fans to have that fight on free on Spike TV.
Mm.
So I'm pretty sure it will be.
Nice. And looking at your career so far, what's been the one thing that that you've had to keep improving in your game? Has anything stood out as the one thing that you've improved most since we last saw you in action?
It's just staying in shape, you know, training long and hard enough, you know. Get lazy sometimes. It's just staying focused and getting in shape and, you know, fighting to the best of my ability, not, you know, not underachieving, fighting be able to, you know, go three rounds hard.
Right.
And keep my weight under control.
Look, staying in shape, because I've been a lot of boxing for a number of years, and, you know, two sports that really depend on you being in shape. It's not like football where you can, you know, sit out a couple plays, or hockey, to do a line change or anything like that. What types of, you know, workouts do you find most beneficial to keep yourself in the tip-top shape, you know, for competition?
You know, different interval training, sparring, you know, wrestling, grappling, and you know, the old tried and true road work. You know, I'm all way now right now driving up to Los Gatos Mountain Desert Resort to go get a 6 miler in real quick.
You're gonna run the six miles tonight? There you said.
What did you say?
Did you say you're gonna run 6 miles tonight?
Yeah, I'm driving right now to the mountain to run 6 miles.
6 miles up a mountain.
Yeah.
Nice. 4 feet of snow like Rocky?
No, there's no snow. There's no snow in California.
Oh. You're going to come to New Hampshire. There's going to be snow here pretty soon.
No, we got mountains.
Yeah. Being from New York, tell us how you got the New York Badass nickname. And.
It was given me. I was doing some kickboxing and boxing, amateur boxing, and I won like about, at the time, I think 17 fights, and they were all by knockout. And some magazine at the time came out with an article, and the title of the article was "New York Badass Destroys Everything in His Path." So, you know, that was, I just took it from there. I just, you know, sounded good, stuck with it.
Nice, nice. So, what do you think? What do you think of those guys from the Jersey Shore?
Been there, done that. You know, been there, done that. You know, that's yesterday's news.
Yeah. All right.
I think I was the original Guido.
Yeah, I was on some pretty racy calls with you in the past at Strikeforce,
yeah.
Elite XC.
Yeah.
Some conference calls. But going into this fight, you know, this is your big opportunity to fight in the UFC in front of a different audience. Do you feel a lot of pressure to really, you know, not only beat this guy, but...
I'm the best under pressure, man. I need the pressure. I perform well under pressure. I've been hearing this talk, gotta win this, and I've done, you know, for the last 5-6 years. I'm good under pressure, you know? No pressure, no diamonds.
Thanks.
And, I'm looking ready to put on a diamond performance, man. You're going to see me at my best. I have a three-month training camp, and I still have 3 weeks, and I go fight tomorrow. My weight, everything's good. No last minute, no beat the clock. I'm ready to go.
All right. And what you say is your break?
This guy's, you know, young kid. I forgot more than he did. I forgot more than he knows. So.
Right.
I'm confident.
And what do you think is your best strength as far as a discipline? I mean, obviously, everybody tries to be as rounded.
You know, I hit hard. I can take a hard shot. And, you know, there's no quitting me. You never see me tap out or, you know, lay down and let the ref stop the fight, you know. So I'll be there to fight. I'll be in the fight to win the fight. And, you see what you get. I mean, I think everybody knows what I bring to the table.
Right. Now, going into this fight, do you notice one thing that stands out about Tavares as the most dangerous thing to watch out for?
He's a young, well-rounded kid. All the guys nowadays are all well-rounded. I mean, he's probably, you know, something thing about him is he hasn't lost yet. So, you know, he doesn't know what it's like to lose. And, I'm going to have to show him, teach him. And, he might think he's going to be the next PJ Penn or something. And,
you know, hasn't even beaten me yet, so. You're going to have to be the dream, right?
Yeah, dream smash. I got to let him know. I got to let him know what's up.
You better recognize. All right, well, do you have an ultimate goal in the sport?
Man, everyone's goal at the end of the day is to be a champion, you know? I'm not going to, you know, make anything. I got nothing to say right now. I just got to win this fight. So, you know, hopeful goal. Win a title and have enough money to retire comfortably someday.
Mm-hmm. And is there anybody out there right now that you really watch a lot or you want to fight?
No, not really. I mean, there's nobody right now. I just want to work my way up the ladder.
Right. And what do you think about this whole boxing and MMA rivalry and guys like James Toney fighting in the UFC?
James Toney, he's an old boxer, and, I think he's just trying to get a payday or something like that.
He's trying a little too hard lately, calling out Rampage Jackson.
Yeah, he's trying to make a couple bucks. You know what I mean? Whatever, man. I mean, he was a great boxer. He was a great boxer back in the day, but, he won the title of all, I don't have to say about his boxing credentials. I have nothing to say about his boxing credentials. There's nothing to say. He's a stud, but, he's not a mixed martial artist. You gotta know how to fight mixed martial arts if you didn't get to be successful in mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
I think what James Toney should have done is instead of getting in the octagon against Randy Couture, and like so I told you, Rich, I told you what was going to happen when that fight happened just because of his style. He would have been better served to go up to Coney Island on the 4th of July weekend and enter the hot dog eating contest. Because that's the kind of show.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Without doubt, but...
Well, I think one thing that stuck out for me, I actually thought Toney was going to have a decent shot going in, because he could maybe possibly keep it in a stand-up for the first 30 seconds. But then I started seeing these videos of him training, and, you got these truck tires all around that MMA guys are usually seen throwing around, and all Tony's doing is hitting the bag slowly.
Very slowly.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think he took it too serious. I mean, he just did it to get a payday.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever.
I think he disrespected the sport. I mean, this people that know the sport.
I wouldn't see where that fight is. I mean, I would go fight James Toney in boxing right now for $1 million. I mean, probably not going to win. Probably not a good chance. It don't really matter how much you train, does it? But,
for the right money.
Fuck it. Yeah. You
do. I guess so.
You'd be an idiot not to.
I don't know, but anyway, looking forward to your match here. What do you think is the most important thing you can do to prepare for this fight?
I'm already prepared. I've done the work. It's done. Stay healthy and get in there now.
Mm-hmm. All right. And what do you like most about the UFC, this new setup you guys got?
I don't got no setup, those are the guys making the money.
Yeah.
They just give me the opportunity to get in the cage and fight. Well, the best thing about it is, the most eyes are on it, that's where all the eyes are right now. UFC is definitely the flavor of the month in the world right now. It's definitely hot, and it's definitely the biggest organization to fight, mixed martial arts, and most people are going to see it, there are guys, as far as mixed martial arts goes, making a lot of money fighting in the UFC, and, that's the name of the game, really,
Yeah, definitely is the top dog financially, and, they do the most.
Yeah, at the end of the day, we'll end up with the most toys wins, right, so... I want to buy some toys, man.
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but one of the things the UFC does a lot, they have these bonuses, for fight of the night and submission. Not...
Yeah, I mean, they probably owe me about 8 or 9 of those.
From the old days?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do that now, and, it seems like some guy gets paid $10,000 to fight. He goes in there and he upsets the guy he's not supposed to go down to, and he doesn't get the fight of the night. But somebody else gets it, you know, and who decides this stuff? You don't know. It's kind of spooky sometimes, but in another sense, it inspires people to do more, I think.
My buddy Kasha got it one night, you know, when I should have got it, when I'm out. So I don't know why he got it, but, you know, whatever. You know, I need the money a little more than he does right now. But, I mean, whatever. What am I going to say?
It's one of those things that I wonder about. Who gets taken care of and why.
I ain't got no say in it. You know, I mean, she's always been pretty good to me. I mean, I'm pretty good friends with Dana. I got nothing to say about that. They, you know, they got their, you know, their money. They, they give it who they want to give it to.
Right.
You know, what can I say? I felt a lot better when everyone told me, you know, you had the best fight tonight. Fuck yeah, $70,000. I don't feel so bad. And when I didn't get it, I was kind of sick. Everything started hurting again.
Yeah, right.
But you know, I'm just not going to go for this run now.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Well, one more question, if you could just tell me, what do you think about Dana White? You know, calling out guys that don't do well, and this big emphasis on putting on a show and not, you know, standing still.
Well, I think about it. He's the worst. He didn't have an opportunity to pay. I mean. Well, why think about it? I mean, I've always fought that way, and you know, it suits my style. I just want to make some money.
Right.
I hope we get some pay for it. You know, it's his money, it's his show, and he's a boss. And you know, you got to fight the way he wants you to fight. Otherwise, you go fight somewhere else, and it's not anywhere else really worth fighting right now. Not too many places, and you know, you got to do. And, you know, if I had all that money invested in mobilization, there were some guys I might not want to fight in my arena. And if I had all that money, you know, I would definitely want a guy like Phil Bonney, and I would have paid him a lot of back money. Back in the day.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, and good luck on the run.
Okay.
Looking forward to
get
the knockout of the night bonus.
I will. Thank you. Knockout of the night and fight of the night.
All right,
guys.
See you. Double. All right. So that was Phil Baroni. Serious Phil Baroni. He's on lockdown. He's ready for his run. Which,
gotta get the run in. Run work. Gotta do it, man.
Very important stuff when you're getting ready for a guy who's undefeated, especially.
Yeah.
So, there you have it. It wasn't as entertaining and full of F-bombs as I thought it would be, you know.
Yeah.
It's just definitely calmed down. He's definitely very serious about this.
Well, you know, I mean, sometimes, I mean, when you got a fight coming up and you're training for it, I mean, and I know just the way I am, you know, during the week of when I'm in the fight, I would be real low-key the entire week. I would train intensely, but I wasn't good for sound bites at all. You know, I'd be at school or whatever, guys would be talking to me, and I was like, yeah, uh-huh. How do you feel? I feel all right, just getting ready to make weight. Got a lot of work to do, you know, whatever. But when the showtime came, then I just turned on, and I was the human interview reel. You know, I was the one they were always trying to get, you know, talking to and interviews with, because God knows what I would say.
Right. Well, we don't have Maurice on until 9:30, so we got some time to look over some news and the boxing and it.
We've got a couple of big boxing matches coming up this weekend on Showtime. You bring a box rack, we can go over them. I mean, well, Vladimir Klitschko, that fight is off. Maybe he hit his back or something. He's supposed to fight a British guy that I never heard of, Derek Chisora.
Oh, wow.
You're not.
But he's upset then. Right?
What?
Nobody's upset then, right?
Yeah. With these Klitschko fights over in Germany now, I mean, this is how scary it's become. And, I can understand why people are getting a little, you know, down on boxing and the sport in general. Okay, the Pacquiao fights, big news. Mayweather fights, big news.
They're talking about having a rematch between Cotto and Margarito in June. Big news. I think that's going to be up in New York, maybe during the, when they have the Puerto Rican Day Parade. That's big news. People follow that. But then when you get, but then when you get to the other thing, the heavyweight championship of the world, the biggest prize in sports, or at least it used to be, when you had the guys like Ali, Frazier, Marciano, Joe Louis, Jack Dempsey, Tyson, Holyfield, all those guys, the heavyweight title meant something. You look at it now, it's like, oh shit, there's going to be a heavyweight title fight this weekend. Vladimir Klitschko is the recognized champion. There was going to be a title fight this weekend, and the only reason about it was because I was reading an article in Ring Magazine said, who is this guy he's fighting, Derek Chisora? Nobody knew who he was, but they're like, yeah, he's got to win over Danny Williams, who once knocked out Mike Tyson, so he must be good. That's sarcasm, Rich. Nobody knows who Danny Chisora is. And the biggest title in boxing, the heavyweight championship of the world, it wasn't even going to be broadcast in the U.S. You'd have to get like that Klitschko internet bullshit, which I never do.
Well, what can you do? Well, we got some. We got an interesting fight going on tonight in the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey, for a main event here. Our boy Tarvis Sims actually already fought on this card, and he won. He beat Willis Lockett, guy you know, I think. 12-10 with five draws and five knockout wins. Tarvis Sims is 25-1-1 with 11 knockouts. And on the main event of that card, we have Thomas Adamek fighting Vinny Matalone.
That'll be interesting. Vinny Matalone, not the best fighter in the world, but he's a physical heavyweight. He's heavy-handed. He's a tough guy. I mean, Adamek's obviously going to be the favorite, but you never know.
Well, our next guest coming on at 9:30, Maurice Byarm, is fighting a six-round heavyweight fight. It's in Pennsylvania on BoxRec here. There's a question mark. I've never seen this before. This Friday, 10th of December, 2010, question mark. Commission, Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission. He's supposed to be fighting the ever-frequent terrorizer, TBA, total bastard, anonymous. I don't know. I was caught on that. But TBA, he's 9-0 with six knockouts. Looking forward to talking to him later. But there's also a female fight on that card. Jacqueline Davis is 4-0, is also fighting TBA at this point. We don't know where it's going to be or what. But we'll have to find out. Anyway, I'll talk to him, find out what's going on with that in a few minutes. There's also a couple other interesting fights worth noting. The fight in Belgium, of all places, worth noting the main event here. 12-round welterweight fight tomorrow night between Saeed Awali, 27-3, 19 knockouts, and Randall Bailey, 41-7. 36.
That ought to be a fight. Randall Bailey obviously is on the downside of his career, but you know what? The man can still punch. We saw what he did to Gatto about 2 years ago, and he flattened him on ESPN with one right hand. And I went to a fight card in Reading about 8 years ago. Bernard Hopkins was defending his title against Carl Daniels, and the main undercard fight was Randall Bailey. And he hit this boy so hard. I mean, the guy, when they say stiff as a board, yeah, you know where that term comes from, because the guy actually fell, and he was completely flat. He did the Apollo Creed fall. And he laid on the canvas for, I'll say, about a good 6 or 7 minutes before they were finally able to get him up on the stool. Randall Bailey can punch. Saeed Ali is a young, up-and-coming fighter, decent record. This is definitely going to be the biggest test of his career. And like I said, is he catching Randall on the downside? Well, I don't know. I mean, Randall's got a puncher's chance. I mean, the man can still punch.
Mm-hmm. Also, we have interesting fights here. Saturday, on Friday here. Tim Witherspoon Jr. fighting in Yorkshire, United Kingdom. Not the main event, but he's 4-1 with one draw, fighting Mark McRae, who's 2-1 with one knockout. And also on Friday in Florida, we got a welterweight fight between Antonio Pitalua, 15-4 with 44 knockouts, fighting Ed Paredes, 25-3-1 with 16 knockouts for the WBO Latino welterweight title. And the guy I saw fight your boy Hank Lundy, Richard Abril, is on that on that card as well, fighting Miguel Angel Munguia. Abril's 13-2 with 6 knockouts, 1 draw. And Munguia is 18-16, 1 draw, 15 knockouts.
I want to talk about the fight that they're having, the card on Showtime Saturday night. They're starting that bantamweight round robin. They got 4 good fighters taking part in this, man. You got Joseph Abeko, who beat Victor Chinian. You got Victor Chinian. You got...
Congratulations.
Johnny Perez.
You collected and received $1,000 Walmart gift card.
And, that stupid thing made me forget the fourth fighter in it. Can you pull that up, Rich?
Oh, yeah. Johnny Perez, Joseph Abeko fighting each other. We got Victor Chinian versus Abner Mares. And
Abner Mares, that's right, man. He's a good fighter.
Eric Morrell, 42-2, 21 knockouts. Victor Chinian is 35-2, 27 knockouts, one draw. And we got the IBF bantamweight title online between Johnny Perez and Joseph Abeko. We also have the International Boxing Organization bantamweight title and the vacant WBC silver bantamweight title on the line between Darchinian and Mars. We got Cesar Seda, who's 19-0, 14 knockouts, fighting TBA for the vacant WBO NABO super flyweight title. Is he super fly? Amir Khan is fighting this weekend.
That's right. I knew there was a fight that I was forgetting. I don't got my computer up in front of me. That's going to be a good fight. I mean, he's fighting Marcos Medina.
Yeah.
That'll be a good fight. As good as Amir Khan is, he's a talented fighter, and he's better every time. You know, he's working with Freddie Roach now. But the one weakness on Amir Khan is his chin is unproven. Bradis Prescott knocked him out 54 seconds a few years ago. And he's been down other times in his career. Now, granted, he's shown a lot of improvement with Freddie Roach. He's got a pretty dominating win over with Paulo Malignaggi. He had a win over Marco Antonio Barrera. Now, he's getting a lot better. But the one thing you can't teach is a chin.
Yeah.
And the thing about Marcos Medina is the guy is a fantastic puncher. He's shown heart.
To his fight, very interesting, a knockout.
Well,
only 2 of his fights have ever ended in a decision.
Exactly. The guy's a tremendous puncher, and he showed a lot of heart when he was fighting vicious Victor Ortiz, and he had Ortiz had him down and hurt, and he got back up and beat Ortiz in the submission. So that's showing right there that the guy is definitely a threat. And if he catches Khan on the chin, it could be good night, Irene.
Yeah, his only decision came against Marcus Corley. His only decision win, I should say. And Corley was 37-13. That was his last fight in August. And the only other time he ever took a fight to a decision was when he lost to Andriy Kotelnikov. He was 30-2 with one draw back in 2000.
DeMarcus Chastain apparently was world class fighter.
Yeah, he was pretty tough. That's the eighth round. In any of his fights, all knockouts. Well, one unanimous decision in a six-round fight for that, but all knockouts otherwise in the early rounds. So, he's got the power. Whether he has the experience, I don't know. Let's see. That should be
When it comes down to speed,
congratulations,
skill,
and selected, receive a $1,000 Walmart gift card.
Mm-hmm.
Yay! When it comes to speed and skill and pedigree, you got to give the advantage to Khan. He's obviously the better trained fighter. He's obviously the faster, more skilled fighter. But then when it comes down to power, you got to give the edge to Madonna. And when it comes down to chin, I think you got to give the edge to Madonna.
Yeah. Okay. You're the expert. I'll defer.
Of course I am. I mean, if you put a gun in my head right now and said, okay, Tony, who's going to win this fight? Logic picks Khan by, a stoppage around, maybe the ninth or tenth round or a unanimous decision. But that's what makes this an exciting fight, because Logic doesn't always win. Logic says Khan wins this fight. He's too skilled. But that's the good thing about this fight. There's a button there. And I like big butts, and I cannot lie. Other brothers can die. Madonna's, he's got that puncher chance. I mean, if he lands one of them bombs on Khan's chin, we're going to the showers early.
Yeah. Well. We also have Victor Ortiz versus Lamont Peterson on this card. Late welterweights, 28-2 is vicious Victor. 22 knockouts, one draw. Got Lamont, who's 28-1 with 14 knockouts. And we also have Joan Guzman, 30-0 with 17 knockouts at light welterweight, fighting Jason Davis, 11-7. One draw and three knockout wins. So all around, it's a pretty decent card. Jeff Lacy is fighting this weekend. Did you know this?
Yeah, he is coming back. Don't know if that's a good idea or not, but you got to get a nice prop.
Needs money. We'll fight for food. Fighting a guy who's got almost as many wins as losses of one, so at least he's pacing himself. Not much going on here overseas. What's we got? Yeah, I think that's about it till next week for boxing. We do have, of course, the Ultimate Fighter show. Not the Ultimate Fighter, but all the Ultimate Fighter coaches. Event here, GSP versus Team Krawczyk, and George St. Pierre is going to be fighting Josh Krawczyk. St. Pierre won the first fight, and now Krawczyk's improved over the years, but I don't know if he's improved enough to beat George St. Pierre. One of the things that was kind of all over the show was the whole idea that you got the one team's experience was just so much better than the others. You had all the coaches and everything. Freddie Roach got brought in by George St. Pierre. It's funny, in one of the last episodes, one of the kids is making fun of Josh Krawczyk. He just does his thing and doesn't care about anybody else. And Josh Krawczyk comes and visits the house right as he's doing an impersonation of him. Kind of interesting. But I don't think he has a chance. He's going to have to pull off a miracle to win that fight. Well, we'll tell you who else is fighting on that. UFC 124. That's St. Pierre versus Koscheck. Stefan Struve, who beat the local kid here in his last fight by miracle comeback. Christian Moorcraft, a local kid from Massachusetts, went up against him the last time I saw him. Struve is 23-4 in MMA. Sean McCorkle, his opponent, is 10-0. Struve is 6'11". They call him the skyscraper. McCorkle's only 6'7". Struve's a tall, skinny guy, too. He's only 238 to McCorkle's 265, so it should be a good heavyweight fight. And we got Jim Miller, who's 18-2, fighting Charles Oliveira, 14-0. So it should be a pretty interesting matchup at 155. Both these guys look like straight-up strikers, you know. Miller's a short-looking, stocky guy like Rocky. Oliveira's tall and skinny. Looks kind of like Amir Khan, actually. Then we got Joe Stevenson fighting Mac Danzig. A couple of blasts in the past here on 155. Joe Stevenson's 36-11. Danzig's 20-8 with one draw. Sounds like a good fight. Then we got Doomsday, John Howard, had a rough fight his last time out. So, you know, he was fighting Jake Ellenberger. And, you know, just a real talented guy. John's pretty much blazed through everybody else, but once he ran into Ellenberger, he was fighting his ass off, but he just was getting punched too many times in the eye, and his eye was one of the worst swollen eyes I've ever seen in a UFC fight. So they had to stop the fight, even though he was still fighting through it. But he's fighting Thiago Alves this Saturday. Thiago Alves is 22-6 at 170. Howard is 14-5, and I think it's like 1-6 of 7. Since he started it in the UFC. So that should be a really interesting fight. We got Mark Bochic taking on Dustin Hazlett at 170 or 155, depending on what catchweight or whatever it is. And Bochic's 8-3, Hazlett's 14-6. And we also have at 185, pretty good matchup between Jesse Bongfelt, who's 15-4, and Rafael Natal, who's 12-3. Both guys 6 feet tall. Might turn into a striking match. And we have Matthew Riddle versus Sean Pearson at 170. Riddle's 5-1, Pearson's 10-4. And also Joe Dirksen versus Dan Miller at 185. Miller's 12-4 with one no contest. Dirksen's 45-13. That's a hell of an MMA record. That's a lot of fights. All right. And we got TJ Grant versus Ricardo Almeida. Grant's 16-4. Almeida's 12-3 at 170. And I think I interviewed this guy before, way back when he first started. Pat Audenwood is fighting at 155. His name is awesomely awesome.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean, you have to get a name like that.
And he's fighting John McAdessy, whose nickname is the Bull. He's 7-0. Audenwood is 9-1-1. This is at 155. Matchup. That's it. Main event, I should mention GSP, George St. Pierre, is 20-2, only 2 losses. Josh Koscheck is 17-4. It's going to be 170 matchup.
So we'll see what happens. And still got about 20 minutes before we got to call Maurice. But, his dad fought Evander Holyfield, so he must have some good coaching and experience. So, what do you think of the Christmas tree season there, Tony? Is it thriving?
Actually, I'm actually very happy so far. So far, the weather's been pretty cooperative with me, unlike last year. And when the weather cooperates, you make more money. It's a simple fact of physics. When you get a little dusting of snow, that's good.
Yeah.
That's Christmas. People can still drive. It's cute, and they get all festive.
Some people do.
When you get what we had last year, which was I worked three Saturdays last year. The first Saturday I worked, we had about 4 or 5 inches. And, you know, during the course of the day, it was good. People thought it was cute. It was Christmassy and all festive. They gave me great tips. This year, the second week we had it, it was about a foot and a half, and that wasn't cute, and nobody could go out. And I ended up getting almost stuck there. I had to stay at my friend's house. But so far this year, been pretty good. The first night I worked off, I worked 15 hours from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. You know, we just did our inventory, did pretty good on, tip-wise when people started coming out. It's been good so far. And this weekend, I got a few gigs going. Got me a big 4-day weekend, which I'm very excited about. Got 2 days off my actual real job, which is a beautiful thing. And I told them not to call me, don't email me, pretend I don't exist. So, yeah. So we got a couple days off from there. Tomorrow, I'll putz around, get some of my Christmas shopping done, get my Christmas cards done. And then hit a lot of work, about 5 or 6 hours tomorrow night. Saturday, doing a quick morning shift, and then after that, I'm going to go work a my friend's daughter's birthday party at Santa Claus. Saturday night, be home in time to watch the fights, which is always good. Sunday, work a few hours, then I'm going to another family function, which I'm going to get 3 sheets to the wind, because I got a dedicated driver. The tornado does not applaud drinking and driving. Which just says get a DD. I got one on Sunday, so I'm going to get drunk. Then I'm going to come home, watch the Eagles beat the shit out of the Cowboys, and I'm going to get drunker. Then I'm going to sleep in on Monday.
There you go.
That's how the tornado does it.
Nice.
You know who I just got an email from, Rich?
Who?
You remember the former heavyweight champion of the world, Terrible Tim Witherspoon?
Oh, yeah.
I got an email from his brother, Steve.
His brother, Steve.
Yeah, I'll tell you, his brother was up in Williamsport, which is close to Lock Haven, so he used to bring some of his guys in to, train with us in the Lock Haven boxing gym. And he and I was in good contact. He was always nice to me because I was a Philadelphia guy, and I knew some of the guys that he knew from Philadelphia. And if you go to my video of my fight with Jordan, which I have on YouTube, you can see him in the background cheering and yelling and just carrying on, which is pretty funny. And I hadn't seen him in about 10 years. I bumped into him at a fight card back in April. So and I looked at him like, hey, what's up? He's looking at me. I'm like, Lock Haven University. He's like, oh, my God, where's your father? I'm like, he's over there. Oh, I remember you guys. You guys used to make the meatballs. They were the best. And we just had a laugh. So I got an email from him tonight. I sent him the me versus Jordan video. It'll bring back some old memories. That was really fun just to do.
Well, we just had a little table collapse over here. My office disintegrated. Thank God we didn't lose connection. We're still alive. So that's how we do it.
Okay.
Thank God the dog wasn't underneath it. His bed's right underneath the table. We got the guy speared. Bart the dog. Bart Favre, we call him. What do you think? You think Brett Favre's going to start this weekend?
I'm telling you right now, I guarantee me we'll shoot him up with something and he'll play. He always does. He'll play, I guarantee it.
I really think it's got to be somewhere in his contract. He must have signed something that said that he literally has to play if he possibly can.
Yeah.
They had the injury in the last game, and Jackson comes in and just has a hell of a game, and they win like in outstanding fashion. And any coach in his right mind would be like, we got to continue that momentum. And the only thing that makes sense to me is if Favre has something in his contract saying that he has to play. That's the only reason he would agree to come back.
I'm telling you, man, he's going to play.
Yeah. Are you taking bets on that, Tony?
Yeah, I would take bets on that. He's going to play.
Right. Well, actually, I'm looking at this BoxRec record for our boy Maurice Byarm here. And it says that this fight on the 10th tomorrow night doesn't look like it's going to happen because he's got another one on the 11th. He's fighting a guy named Winston Thorpe. It's a National Guard armory in Pikesville, Maryland. And Winston Thorpe actually fought a guy I've seen fight. And maybe a guy that you've seen fight. I don't know. He fought. His first fight was in Philly at the South Philly Arena against Kareem Harris. This is David.
I know Kareem Harris. I've never had a chance to go to the South Philly Arena. They do fight there like every so often. I haven't had a chance to go there yet.
Well, he fought this guy Winston Thorpe. Also fought Jesse Barboza. And I don't know if you remember, but I was talking about a card that I saw down in Plymouth, Massachusetts, not too long ago. And there was a guy, this guy, Jesse Barboza, there, and his nickname is Bad News. So they would get the crowd going there at the fight, and he's a heavyweight guy, you know. And they'd yell out, Bad News, and then he'd start going teeing off on the guy. And I was like, one of the best nicknames I've ever seen a guy have and use the way he did. So he's bad news for he actually Winston had two straight fights against him, and he won the first time, and Barboza was 3-0, and he went into Barboza's backyard because Barboza's from New England, and he went into Lincoln, Rhode Island, and beat him by split decision back in May of 2010. So Barboza gets the rematch in November 12th. And this time it's a draw. So Maurice is in for a big fight. But he's 9-0, 6 knockouts. He's had some pretty good fights. This is really a step up for, you know, major winning records. Someone he's going to be fighting is 3-0, 1 draw. Last guy he fought with a winning record was Jason Freeman, who was 5-0-1 in Baltimore, Maryland, back in June 17th this year. Knocked him out in the first round. So we'll see. We'll see if this is this was just a fluke there with Barboza, or if he's the real deal, Winston Thorpe. I'm thinking about giving this guy a call 10 minutes early, see if he's ready. What do you think, Tony?
Let me do that. I just want to go over something that, I mean, I don't have the full info on it. I don't know the full story behind it, but I do got to bring this up. There was a kid in Philadelphia. He's a pro fighter now. I actually sparred with him when he was first starting out. You know, he's down in the gym, and I was a bigger guy than he was. He was, you know, taller. He was about, you know, 6'1", but he was lighter. He was about 156 pounds, you know, so obviously I was, he was a heavier, you know, more physical guy. But the trainer pulled me aside, this trainer, Kevin, who was my original trainer, because he knew that he wanted somebody that was going to work with this kid in the ring and not, you know, try to take any liberties and not try to, you know, when you're going in there with a guy and it's his first time training, I mean, you know, okay, yeah, you might, sometimes you want to show them what it's all about, but there are other times that you might want to just get in there and go slow enough where they can learn to see things and learn to do things. So he pulled me aside and goes, yo, will you get in there for a few rounds with this kid and work light, you know, I mean, don't really hit him. You're bigger than he is. You're more experienced than he is. And just let him see punches. Let him throw some at you, show how to, you know, defend him. I said, absolutely. You know, he was a hell of a nice kid and, you know, very respectful. So I got him in the ring, and I remember after a couple rounds, and we were going very light, you know, I mean, we were hitting each other, but, you know, we were controlling everything. And I put my trainer aside. I said, how long has this kid been boxing? He said, really, he just started with us. This is his first sparring session ever. I said, you're bullshitting me. And he goes, no, he goes, this is his first sparring session ever. And I pulled the kid aside, and I was talking to him, and I was telling him some of the things, you know. He was giving him some advice, some things, you know, what I saw. And I told him, you know, his name is Philip. I said, Philip, listen, young man. I said, you know, you did a very excellent job out there tonight. I said, I couldn't believe this was your first sparring session. You were just that naturally talented. And, you know, I think you really have the chance to, you know, do well.
I want you to line.
Yeah, well, he kind of got, well, that's one thing he said. He goes, are you bullshitting me? I said, no, I'm not. I said, he goes, man, I goes, I really appreciate that. And I sparred with him a few more times. And he went, he was doing well in the amateurs. I mean, he was knocking guys out. And, you know, my trainer would always send me, like, updates. Like, hey, man, Phil knocked this kid out. Phil did that. Well, Phil went pro. Then he had a few personal problems, got away from the sport. Went pro, and he's 8-1, I think, with 5 knocks. Now, he was supposed to have a fight, I think, coming up this weekend. His opponent, who was 9-0 with 6 knockouts, decided not to even show up to the weigh-in. And they're talking about a kid that's being ducked. This is the second time that opponents have just decided not to show up instead of fighting them. Rich, you still there? I can barely hear you if you're even saying anything.
Sorry, I had to go throw another log in the fire. You know, it's like 0 degrees up.
Oh, okay.
Damn shit.
What the hell is going on here?
I was hoping the it could be the Tony the Tornado for 5 minutes.
Yeah. No, that was just what I was telling you, man. That's the second time in a row that somebody just decided not to come to the weigh-in instead of fighting this kid.
Oh, yeah. That's ridiculous. Isn't there some kind of fine for that?
I don't know. I mean, maybe, I don't know. I mean, maybe they might have said you got a sick or who knows. I just, I mean, of course, I'm only getting, you know, very limited information.
Yeah. Well, we're going to give Maurice a call. Get him on the line here. Give him an extra few minutes. So let us know about his boxing career and his big matchup here. Matt Janowski. Must be sparring.
What's going on, Mr. G? I'm unable to answer my call right now because you need your name and number and message. I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Thanks.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Maurice, This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron and Tony the Tornado Pentacal. We're going to be calling you back in a few minutes, hoping to do an interview. We thought we'd try early, but looks like must be otherwise occupied right now. So we'll try you back in a few minutes, and looking forward to talking to you about boxing. So we're going to have to wait for that one. What can you do?
Yeah, I mean, ain't much you can do, you know? I'm trying to think what else. What else I wanted to tell you. But, of course, I'm half brain dead, so I kind of forget things anymore. Oh, shit. I had a cool fight story. You loved it.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, you would have. Let me think. Well, I'm the tornado. I always think.
You can do it.
You can do it! Oh, by the way, while I'm thinking, here's another thing I love to do. This is part of my wonderful maturity. This is what I love to do around the holiday season. I love the holidays. I mean, Christmas is the second to Halloween. I love Halloween. But the one thing I love to do around Christmas is, you know, we have these family functions, and I always order an extra gift for myself because there's certain things I want, and I was going to buy them anyway. So I buy them around the holiday time, and then I wrap them up. But what I'll do is I'll either, you know, print the tag on it so the people can't, they won't know it's my handwriting, or, you know, or I'll have either somebody from, like, work or like that write the label for me. So I'll open it up. And I won't put from who on there. I'll put, like, Santa Claus or something like that. And then it'll be something really cool in there. And I'm like, oh, man, thanks. This is really awesome. I'm, who got this for me? And nobody knows. I didn't want you to my parents. We were sitting there. My parents are there. I don't know if anybody else was there. But I was like, I forget. I don't even know what it was. It was, I think it was the one you're, like, with a Flyers jersey or something. I'm like, dude, this is badass. Where'd you get this from with my name on and stuff? And, like, my mom looked at my dad like, I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. He looked at her, and I'm like, come on, seriously. Who got this? Where'd you get it from? This is awesome. This jersey's beautiful. It's got, like, sewn on numbers and everything. It says tornado in the back. And I looked at it, and she's like, who got that for him? And it's, I'm like, come on. And they're like, you know, where'd you order it from? I'm like, give me the website. And nobody knew. And that was funny. Then I finally came out. I'm like, no, I ordered it myself. So this year, there's a rumor going around that Santa Claus is bringing me an authentic with the cool mesh that they wear for the summer, Philadelphia Phillies jersey with the World Series patch on it, number 99 tornado. And people are like, well, how do you say it goes to bring it? I'm like, because I ordered it the other day. Got 40% off. Couldn't resist. So it was a good deal. Wanted to buy myself one anyway. Here we go.
You could have got it for free from your lookalike.
Is that the truth? God damn it, I didn't think about it.
You should just waltz into the equipment room one day and just start taking stuff. Be like, don't you know who I am?
Well, the one thing I got to say to him is like, start calling me Tornado. I want my jersey to say Tornado. And it's like, okay. And change my number to 99 while you're at it.
All right. Well, we're going to give Maurice another shot here.
If not, we reschedule.
Well, he was the first one to confirm. We got Maurice before we got Phil. That'll be
hello?
Maurice!
Yeah, this is Maurice.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing?
How's life as an undefeated boxer?
Who's this?
This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. You're on the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show.
Oh, hey, what's up, man? You called me off guard. How's life as an undefeated boxer? I can't complain.
Yeah, nice.
I can't complain that one bit.
Now, I actually seen a guy who fought the guy that you're fighting next. This,
you, say that again?
The guy you're fighting next to you, the Stork guy.
Yeah.
I'm looking at your record earlier, and I realized I've seen this guy, Barboza, the guy he fought the last two times.
Yeah, he's supposed to be a promising heavyweight, from what I hear. I don't really know too much about him. Barboza, the one that lost to Stork, correct?
Yeah. I've seen him fight up here in Plymouth, Massachusetts, and he's a pretty interesting fighter. You know, he just he stands and bangs, but you know, he didn't really get tested until he went up against this guy you're going to be facing, Winston.
Okay. I haven't gotten tested to see anything on Winston yet at all.
Yeah. Well, Barbosa was a pretty tough kid. He fought him twice and went to a draw the last time, so.
Yeah. Well, I don't think this fight is going to go to a draw. I don't think it's going to go the whole distance. Somebody won't be standing at the end of this fight. I can promise you that.
You like them knockouts, don't you?
hey man. You know, they love it when you knock people out. So I just try to give people what they pay their money for.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of people come to see me, and I don't, you know. I try to make it a short night for everybody, but exciting.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
That's exactly what it's all about. This is my job as an entertainer, you know what I mean?
Right. So how did you get started with boxing in the first place?
How did I get started? Actually, I was watching Chris Bird fight. Chris Bird and Klitschko. I was watching a fight, and as it was going on, me and my dad was just sitting there, and I was talking to my dad. I said, I can beat both of them. And this was never, ever stepping foot in the gym at all. And, you know, and I decided that Monday, it was a Friday night fight. That Monday, I went into the gym, and, you know, and I was addicted.
Nice. And what would you say is your ultimate goal in the sport?
I think my ultimate goal is to reach that legacy of some of the old fighters, you know, some Riddick Bowe, you know, Holyfield, Mike Tyson, you know, Larry Holmes, just some of the old fighters. I want to be one of those fighters that was more of the quality. I fought, you know, due to quality, not, you know, quantity. I don't want to fight 1,000 bums. I want to fight some fights that people are going to say, wow, you remember that? I want to have some epic, you know, trilogies, like a Toro guy and Mickey Ward, you know what I mean? So those are the things that I want to achieve.
Yeah, I know. It
was funny because, you know, we were talking about the heavyweight division just a short while ago before we got you on the air. It looks like, you know, you're a pretty big guy, you know, in the 250-pound range, so... I'm just looking at your box rec, you know, right now. So you're one of the, you know, the big heavyweights that, you know, are obviously progressing. The guys are getting larger and larger every year. And the one thing I said to Rich, you know, a short while ago is, for me growing up, I mean, I've been a boxing fan for a long time. And then, of course, it's been a generational thing through my family. And the heavyweight championship of the world was the biggest prize in sports. Ali and Frazier, the world stop. George Foreman, Mike Tyson, Ali, Marciano, Lewis, Dempsey. I mean, the heavyweight champion, Tyson, Holyfield, the biggest prize in sports. Now, the only reason I knew there was supposed to be a heavyweight title fight this weekend was because I picked up a Ring magazine last week, and they were talking about this guy, Derek Chisora, that nobody knew about, going to fight Vladimir Klitschko, and I said, oh, that's on December 11th. Well, the fight got postponed. Klitschko hurt his back, whatever. But I'm like, the biggest prize in sports, you can't even watch on American TV right now. I said, you know, that's what's killing the sport. I said, we need like a guy coming out there, American heavyweight, that's knocking everybody out. And people are going to say, HBO is going to say, you know what? Let's get this guy on our air as much as we can. Can you be that guy for us?
I agree. My whole thing as, you know, as a heavyweight, I know I have an obligation, I have a duty, because like I said in some recent interviews, the heavyweight division was the most coveted division
at one point where everyone, I don't care who you was, you watched a heavyweight fight when it came on. I don't care if you knew who it was fighting. You watched the fight because, you know, two big guys going at it, somebody got to go to sleep. Somebody has to go to sleep. You know, and nowadays you're getting a lot of heavyweights that's not producing like they want to. A lot of heavyweights don't want to get hit. A lot of them don't be in good shape. So if you do get a knockout, it's more of a TKO. The guy was so tired he couldn't get off the ground while the referee was counting. And, you know, I feel like it's my job to bring some kind of excitement back to the sport. You know what I mean? I don't know. I mean, these are my goals. You know, I hope to achieve these goals in this sport, but those are my goals. I want to bring back to the heavyweight division, which has been lost for for at least the last 10 years. You know what I mean? We haven't had nobody that's real, real good in the last 10 years that broke the mold.
Ever since Lennox Lewis retired, really?
The only person that gave a glimmer of hope was Chris Areola within these last couple years, and when he beat Chaz Witherspoon, it was great. Everybody, you know, counted him in as a legitimate heavyweight, American heavyweight. Now he's prime time, and then he lost to Klitschko. Then, you know, he fought, I think, one or two more fights for that boy Brian Mental, and kind of disappeared from the scene. We haven't heard nothing from him since. You know what I mean? So I keep up with my heavyweights, and I know where I want to be at, and I know some people that I'm gonna have to take down to get where I want to be at. You know what I mean?
I re-interviewed Chris a couple years ago. He's the guy you wanted him to do well because he was
I can't hear you. It's all broken up.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Okay. Well, I was thinking, we interviewed Chris a couple of years ago, and he was the guy you wanted him to do well because he was what the heavyweight division, you know, should have been, a guy that was a banger, a guy that was going to bring excitement. I know Chaz Witherspoon from Philadelphia, and when Chris beat him, yeah, it was disappointing, but it was also exciting. But I knew he was going to be in trouble when he stepped it up because of his style. He was too straightforward, too straight up for a shorter guy. And he was too easy.
I'm talking about
Chris Areola. I mean, I knew Chaz, and when Areola beat him, it was a good step up for him. But I also watched him in his fight against Travis Walker when he got knocked down. I'm like, he's too easy to hit with right hands. And I knew he was going to be in trouble fighting a guy so much bigger than him, like Vitaly Klitschko was. And as you said, Chris wasn't versatile enough.
Yeah, I think Chris, one thing about Chris, I'm a big fan of Chris Areola. I look forward to fighting him one day. That'll be a step up for me, especially if I win. But I think his style is more of it's just one dimensional. And nowadays, fighting all different kind of, you know, it's more southpaws coming up to bat nowadays. And this division, you gotta have different looks for every different fighter, because every fighter is bringing something different from over the years that they've learned. So you gotta know how to be able to, you know, it's not like the amateurs where you can just, you know, switch up in a fight for, you know, 2 minute rounds. This is serious business. You gotta be able to fight a fighter and teach him out his game plan at the same token, you know, making whatever adjustments you need to make in your own game plan. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I'm a big fan of Chris, but I just think he's a one-dimensional kind of fighter. And, you know, that's my opinion. I could be totally wrong, though.
Yeah, that's all right. You're entitled to your opinion. Now, what's this about your dad? I read your dad fought Evander Holyfield.
Yeah, my dad fought Evander Holyfield, what, in 84, if I'm correct? 84, it was in the lower 80s.
Huh. Yeah, I think that was Evander's premier deal, a six-rounder, which is, first of all, very unusual for a guy coming in his premier deal fighting a six-rounder. Now, Evander is still fighting out there. Is there a chance for you to avenge that loss?
We're having?
Evander's still fighting. Is there a chance for you to avenge your father's loss?
uh,
By the time I get to his stage, if he's still fighting, you know, of course I will fight him, you know, to avenge my father's loss. But I think, to be honest with you, I think when my dad fought him, it was my dad lost the fight and everything, but it was a great fight for my dad. It kind of pushed my dad over the top because they realized my dad was a tough opponent. My dad was, he stood in there with Evander Holyfield. If you ever watch the fight, if you ever get the privilege of checking it out, Evander was tired. He was done after that fight. And previously, before that fight, none of his fights went past three rounds. So, you know, it was a good victory for my dad. And if I ever got the chance, of course I would fight Evander Holyfield. Not just because to avenge my dad, but because he's one of the greatest fighters in my book. You know what I mean? So, of course, it's like a father and a son. Every son wants to be better than his dad. You know what I mean? And that's he's always my hero. You know, growing up, I watched Evander Holyfield and you know studied his style. Man, he was a technician.
That'd be one of those funny conversations, you know, when your father starts saying, "Oh yeah, I used to walk 12 miles to school in the snow barefoot."
Yeah, but you
know, Dad, huh? Yeah, man, yeah. I got to go to a fight card down at Atlantic City about, I guess 17 years ago now. Boy, how time flies. But it was his first fight after he lost the title to Riddick Bowe, that great fight you had in 92. And he was coming back, he was fighting Alex Stewart, who was a tough fighter. And I was going, because Evander was talking about retiring, but then he decided to come back, fight Stewart, and then eventually he did go on to beat Bowe in his next fight. And I was like, wow, man, the great Evander, hopefully, watched, you know, growing up after he came out, he's been watching great fights with Michael Dokes and Dwight Muhammad Cowie and Riddick Bowe and all those guys. I was like, I'm going to get to see Evander Holyfield fight live and before he retires. Nobody knows 17 years later he's still fighting.
I know. And actually, he's a, you know, I was, me and my dad was sitting back the other day and I was going through my phone looking at when he fought Sultani Bragimov, and I was sitting back looking at the fight, and I was looking at, because him and my dad are literally the same age. I think my dad got him by like a couple months. And I'm looking at Holyfield, and I'm looking at my dad, and I'm like, dang, you look old compared to Evander, you know what I mean? I'm like making comparisons in my head, and I'm like, wow. You know, it's cool, you know, just to be able to go back a part of that, to check out that kind of history. And you know what I mean? It's like looking at two pictures. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Rich will tell you this. I love to consider myself like a boxing historian. I'm in a boxing nut. I mean, especially growing up in Philadelphia, where you get to go to places like the Blue Horizon and other great venues in the city. You're close to Atlantic City to catch, you know, big, especially back in the early 90s, when they were having a lot of world title fights down there. And then, of course, with the Gotti, popularity there back in the, about the last decade. So I got to go to a lot of fights over the years, and I always loved it. And I consider myself like a boxing historian. You know, I read old magazines and, you know, I love, you know, look at old films and watch some of the greats like the Sugar Ray Robinsons and the Joe Louises and the Rocky Marcianos and all the different styles of fighters, the Muhammad Ali's, the Joe Frazier's. And what was funny is, like, I always keep the programs of all the fight cards I go to, whether it's a little small show in Philadelphia with a bunch of, like, guys that you'll never think you'll hear of again, but you might.
Yeah.
I know there were some guys that I saw when they were 1-0 or making their pro debut that I ended up seeing on ESPN. Chaz Witherspoon, I saw him when he was just starting out. I knew Chaz. In fact, I just got an email from Chaz's uncle about a half hour ago, his Uncle Steve, who I knew from the amateurs. What was also funny was the first real big fight card my dad took me to. I was 15 years old. It was at Atlantic City, and Michael Moore was fighting Burt Cooper in the main event, and I really wanted to go. Ended up being fight of the year. My dad takes me down to it, and I'm a 15-year-old kid, and we're sitting there up in the cheaper seats. and it was the second fight of the night. Two kids fighting a four or a six rounder that you never heard of. But the song Thunderstruck played, and I used to love AC/DC. I still do. So that comes on, and I'm bebopping, and I'm dancing. And my dad looks at me and goes, oh, my God, you're embarrassing me. I'm a 15-year-old kid. That was the first time I got to see a young kid. He was 5-0, Arturo Gatti. I saw him when he was a 5-0. Yeah, Atlantic City.
Wow, that's a memory of hole right there, brother. I'll tell you that. You know, I haven't me growing up. I really didn't get. I really wasn't exposed to boxing as much as I think the you know the ups and downs my dad had in boxing. He'd rather him not add me on to become a fighter and just let me kind of pick my own path, which was good. But I think you know he definitely I love fighting. You know, I got a gazillion fights at school. I kicked out of school 1,000 times. And he could have bribed me 1,000 times with taking me to the gym and everything. But at a certain point, I just was, you know, I was out of there, and I was, you know, I was smoking cigarettes and smoking marijuana and just doing a whole bunch of stuff that I really shouldn't have done. But once I got my life straight and everything, that's when I really dug everything inside me into boxing. I studied boxing. I really don't study too much of like. A lot of older fights, like, you know, I watch a couple of Joe Louis's tapes, a couple of Ray Robinson tapes and everything, but I try not to dig too far back. I try to stay in my era where I can know where, you know, where things have gone from where my era has been and now where they're going now. You know what I mean? So I can have my own kind of history. That's my son. But so I can have my own part of dig my own mark into my own history. You know what I mean? Because I don't want to look too far back to the fact that boxing has changed 1,000 ways since Jack Dempsey. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it seems lately too like the attention's focused to these younger, not necessarily younger, but lighter guys, you know, faster, lighter guys.
I say lightweight on up is lightweight to probably about light heavyweight is really where it's happening at.
Yeah, that's where they're making them big matches and Manny Pacquiao just going.
And I feel like I can bring something back to the heavyweight division. You know, I feel like when I do fight, me personally, I'm my own worst critic, so I'm always going to criticize myself. But, you know, judging from the fans' reactions when I get finished fighting, you know, I'm always one more fan on board whenever I fight. So, if I can just get one more fan, that's a job well done for me. So, you know, I feel like I can bring something back to the heavyweight division. Maybe I am the one that brings something back. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm just someone just to start a line there where somebody else can pick off. But I'm gonna do my best. I'm gonna give 100% when I go out there, and you know, and I'll see where it goes.
Now, what do you love most about boxing?
What do I love most about it?
Yeah.
I just love the combat. You know, I love using my brain a lot. A lot of the fights I had, I think maybe one fight I fought a guy, Jason Freeman, and he was at that time I was 6-0, he was 5-0, and he was the only person that really made me use my brain, but you know. I knew he was undefeated. I was undefeated, so I had to come in there and use some thoughts. And I wanted to stop him the first round with a body shot. But, you know, he was one to fight. A lot of the fighters I had, I wasn't really able to use my brain. But I like to make my fight a thinking man's fight. You know what I mean? That's when it's most exciting. But at the same token, you know, keep my hands moving and everything. But I like to make it a thinking man's fight. And you know, it's like a man that plays chess, man. You know, everyone always says boxing is, you know, chess, not checkers.
But and it's very true. I love playing chess personally, and boxing is very, very, very well a chess match.
You know, you do know there is a hybrid. They do have chess boxing. There you go.
You learn something new every day.
Yeah, I could not believe it when I first heard this, but they actually have boxing matches, and they break, and they play a game of chess. And they do this overseas, and they have big events all around it and everything. And it's just kind of weird, but it kind of makes sense, like you said.
I mean, like, I was talking to I was boxing a guy in a gym. And you know, I hit him with the shot, and he got a little buzz, and he wanted to stop the whole sparring session. I hurt him real bad, but I was telling him at the end of the fight, boxing literally, it's not just coming forward and throwing punches. It's about making, if I can make you move your hands just a tad bit from your face so I can get my punch off, I did my job. You know what I mean? And that's where the thinking comes in at. And you get a lot of them older fighters, like I'm going to go back to Evander Holyfield. Evander Holyfield would make you move your hands just by him moving around. You didn't know what was going on in Evander's mind. And by the time he hit you with a jab, next thing you know, his right hand was coming and, you know, the left hook was coming behind it, either to the body or coming up to the head. And, you know, and that's what boxing is all about. That's what I love about boxing. I hate a boring heavyweight match. I watch so many heavyweight matches, you know, just being involved in the sport, and all of them are boring. And, you know, and I really can't watch them. I watch them because you want to see who's next up the bat, but it's so slow, and it's, you know, none of the guys are in shape. And, you know, it's horrible. It's just bad. I see why the heavyweight division lost its sting.
You know, what's a shame about that whole thing is a lot of people, like, will say, well, since the heavyweights aren't exciting, you know, it's a death for boxing. And I don't think that's true. You know, you got so many good fighters out there. You got, and I'm not just talking about, you know, guys like the two that everybody talks about, Pacquiao and Mayweather. No, you got other really good fighters out there. And you still got the Marquez brothers. You still got Sergio Martinez out there. You just wonder, the Executioner Hopkins is still going at it, fighting for a title next week. You got that exciting Super Six tournament. You got good fighters in that, and I'm telling you, wait till Andre Ward breaks out and becomes a breakout star. I mean, he is a kid that, I mean, talk about has a little bit of everything. Good boxer, good puncher, defense, skills. We don't know much about his chin yet, but, I mean, overall, I mean, the guy's a good fighter. And then you got another guy.
Well, I love his boxing IQ. He's a very intelligent fighter. If you notice about him, he never has one style that you could say that it's his style. You know, when the fighters that put in front of him, he handles them the way that's supposed to be handled. You know, everyone has an Achilles heel in this sport, and he literally seeks that Achilles heel, and he penetrates the skin on that Achilles heel, and that's what makes him a great fighter in my book. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're 100% right.
Yeah, he will find whatever weakness you got, and he exposes it. When he saw Holly Green, I was a believer when he saw Holly Green. You know, he did everything that Allen Green didn't want him to do.
I mean, there's a lot of good fighters in the sport today, and that, you know, unfortunately, they're just not getting the attention. Now, that's round robin on Showtime's coming up. Those are four good, exciting fighters, and the only problem is, you know, none of them are household names because, you know. I'm not sure about Abner Maris, but I know the other ones are not American born. Between Victor Chinian, Joseph Abeco, and Yanni Perez, all good fighters though. Potentially be exciting fights. I mean, you can even get cruiserweight fights out there these days that are exciting. I'll tell you, Rich and I covered a fight. We actually had a webcam at the time, and we put the webcam facing the TV, and then he and I did the audio over the fight, which was a great fight a couple years ago between Steve Cunningham, a cruiserweight champion who I know from Philadelphia, against Thomas Adamack. And what an outstanding fight that was. If more people had a chance to watch that, you'd have more boxing fans out there immediately because the fight was so damn good.
Yeah. That was a great fight right there. And Steve's about to fight again also, I think, in Germany somewhere. But that was a great fight right there. The Adamack and Cunningham, phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
I think Adamack dropped him like three times, didn't he?
Yeah. And the thing is, those were the only three rounds that he won, really. But the thing is, those knockdowns accounted for something. And, like I said, I know Steve personally. We've interviewed him, and I've met him and his wife, who's also, they're a great pair. She's his manager. I met them at several Philadelphia fight cards. Steve hit him on the chin it looked like he was taking batting practice sometimes. He hit him with so many right hands and left uppercuts that Adamack, I swear, what is in his chin is not human. I mean, I think that's what, they should put that on tanks.
Yeah. Adamack, he's him being in the heavyweight division right now, I'm curious to see how far he'll go in this division once he starts fighting some of the younger heavyweights, better ones, heavyweights.
Yeah.
Right now, that's another thing that's really bothering me about the sport of boxing is that they're recycling so many of the older fighters that they won't even get a younger fighter no chance to make that mark. You know what I mean?
Right. Look at the four guys that Adamack has fought. He came up, and I think David Hayes that fought Monte Barrett, I think. But he had his first fight at heavyweight. He's won all of his fights. He had the fight against Chris Areola, which was a good fight. Areola hurt his hand. Adamack actually showed some very good boxing skills in that fight.
He had the fight against Michael Green, who 10 years ago had the potential to be a great fighter, just didn't have a good chin. And I think that ended up, just shattering his confidence more than anything. Adamack's Estrada, who was an Olympian, and now he's fighting this weekend against Matalone, who's a tough kid, but, this is going to be a good, exciting fight because they're both kind of straightforward guys. But the problem with Adamack, which is going to be, I think, his downfall, when he fights the guys on the level of, I'd love to see Adamack and David Hay, because, I could just see that just being a war of words and then being a war in the ring. Hay's probably a little too fast for him, probably hits a little bit too hard. What I think is going to hurt Adamack is the fact that when he fights the really bigger and elite guys, he has glaring holes in his defense. Chin has been saving him so far, but I think his skin is going to be his downfall. I've seen him get cut up. I've seen him, really show the effects of some of the fights on the face, and I think that's what's going to be what, takes him out of it.
Yeah, and that's the thing about the also another thing about the heavyweight division, where you got guys coming from, smaller divisions coming up to be heavyweights that I don't believe should be heavyweights. You know what I mean? That should be heavyweights. I don't think that, Adamack should be a heavyweight. Especially once you get against some guys like Areola. It's no telling what would have happened if Areola wouldn't mess his hand up.
Right.
That would have been a good fight because Areola hurt him a couple. Michael Grant hurt him a couple times in the fight.
He
hurt him bad.
I hate to cut this short. We're running out of time. We got a minute left here, so just
no problem.
If you want, anybody you want to give a shout out to or anything or
Mastermind Sports and Entertainment. That's the management company I'm signed with. I want to give a big shout out to Mastermind. I want to give a shout out
to Matt Yano, great guy from Philadelphia.
Hey,
you know, I want to give a shout out to Philadelphia Perry. I want to give a big shout out to Washington D.C. They've been they welcomed me in with open arms, and they, you know, and they love me back. And you know, I want to give a shout out to y'all also, man, for calling me and you know, and changing words about boxing with me.
Well, it's definitely our pleasure.
We'll see you in action. We're looking forward to it. So thanks a lot.
All right.
Have a good
Thank
night.
You all very much, and I hope you all enjoy the fight.
All right.
Thanks.
See you later. All right, Rich, I'm out of here. This is the tornado, and I'm out.
Adios.